our assistant district superintendent. It's a delight to turn the podium to him at this time. Brother Slayton, come, and God bless you as you minister to us this evening.
Thank you. Brother Farmer had asked me to share with you some information and some of the experience that I've had in building. I really don't feel like a building expert. If there's anybody in this room that probably is less skilled at building than I am, they're really in trouble. When I was a teenager, I worked on a house one time, and the guy told me to go cut some window stop, and I went in, I worked diligently for a while, and whenever he came in to check on me, I'd cut up a bunch of expensive baseboard. So you can see that I never did learn very much about building. I never did have the ability to go into a church and with my own hands do what needed to be done. I would have had to depend on somebody else. I just do not have that skill. But in spite of that, I'm convinced whether you have of course, the more skill you have in that area, probably you can get things done cheaper than I can get things done. The only problem with the fellows that have skill in that area is they have a tendency to do all that themselves, wear themselves out in a building program, and then when they get it finished, they have to relocate somewhere to recuperate their strength and their abilities so that they can continue the work that God wants them to do. So in that sense, I'm just grateful and thankful that I wasn't blessed with that kind of skill, because when everybody sees what I'm able to do, they never expect me to do any of that. I've never had anybody want to hire me to do that kind of work, and I've never had any deacons lean on me to do that, because I just tell them up front that I just don't have that ability. If they're looking for a builder, they just need to get somebody else, because I can't do that kind of thing. But it doesn't do away with the fact that when you pastor a church, there comes a time when there's some building that has to be done. One of the first experiences that I had in a building project was to brick a church. It had been redone on the inside, and it needed some attention on the outside. That project was a very small project. We had to redo some gas lines and have some ledge poured around the building so we could put a brick facing on it, and then we hired the bricklayers, and so that was really a relatively simple project, and there wasn't a whole lot involved in that. But the Lord helped us to get it all worked out, and that was one of my earliest projects, and it was completed successfully. Other than that, I didn't do a whole lot of building. I helped purchase a building for a pioneer church on one occasion so that they could have a facility to meet in, but the building was already there, and all I did was go to the savings and loan, and that was during the days when some savings and loans were more favorable to churches than they are today, and we were able to secure a loan. It wasn't a large loan. I think $7,200 is about the amount that we paid for the building at that time. So when I built the building that we are presently occupying in Amarillo, it was a major project. Not having building skill, not being able to oversee the project, I along with the board served as the building committee, and we worked together in that project. It cost us approximately $1.2 million to build the building. We probably have in excess of $1.5 million value on the property at the present time, with it completed in the present condition it's in now. All I know to do is tell you what we did when we got ready to build and felt the necessity for building. We first began to look for property, and we wanted to centrally locate, because we were we had people coming from different parts of the city. So we looked over on I-40. If you're familiar with Amarillo, we looked up and down I-40, and at the time we began looking for property, there was so much, property was so high, it was just out of the question. So we went out into an area of southwest Amarillo where there was no Assemblies of God Church. Well, we're the only one on the side of the E-Way that we're on. We began to look for property, and we found a piece of property that was just inside the city limits. The city was moving that way, and we felt it was a good piece of property. And we were able to negotiate with those people for 20 acres of land. At that time, it was wheat field. And we paid, I think we had $10,000 in the bank, and we negotiated with a man that owned the property to buy that property, pay him $2,000 a month. He carried the note at 5% interest, and we were to pay it out, I think it was $10,000 an acre we paid for the property. And so we felt like that it was a very good deal, and so we just paid down on it and started paying on it until we were ready to build. And then we put the church on the property. We bought 20 acres. We did not feel we'd need 20 acres for what we were wanting to do, but we felt like when the time came to build, it would be wise to have the extra acreage. We could sell off 10 acres and maybe recoup the amount of the land that we bought. As it happened, in order to give you some idea of what happened when we got ready to build, we built during the worst time a person can possibly build. We decided the time had come, and about the time we got ready to start building, interest rates went up to 18 and 20%. And we had already laid our plans, we had everything on go, and so we began to negotiate and look around and decide what to do. And we finally, after investigating the money situation, with no more money than we had to put down on the project, we decided that it would be necessary for us to sell off some of the land. And so what we did, we went out, and if you can visualize this as being a 20-acre piece of land, and if you can look at the top of this is Bell Street, if you're familiar with Amarillo, and most of you probably are. We were going to build. We divided this property in half, and we were going to build on this corner. This is what the ideal location. This is what we wanted to do. But when money got so tight, we decided that we were going to have to do something, make some kind of adjustment in order to get a building, because we wanted to be wise. We did not want to get the church overloaded with debt so that they would end up under a constant terrible strain all the time. So we decided. And this street right here is hillside, so we decided this 10 acres had commercial value. We rezoned it commercially, and the Lord helped us to get a favorable hearing on it, and about this much of the land was rezoned commercially. It was about 8.5 acres. And we were able to sell this piece of property for $350,000. We bought it for $200,000, the whole acreage. We sold this for $350,000. They paid us $100,000 down, and then they've been paying us at the rate of $60,000 a year. They pay us 12% interest. Then we went to the bank, and with this negotiation in hand, we went to the bank, and we were able to borrow $800,000, and from the bank. And that gave us the funds that we were able to use in order to get our building project underway. Now, when we started the project, it was a little bit interesting. When we started the project, the first federal savings and loan in Amarillo, and the Amarillo National Bank cooperated in the loan. One institution was going to loan us $400,000. The other institution was going to loan us $400,000, which would have made the $800,000 we needed. And then we were going to sell some bonds to make up the rest of the money that we needed for our building project. And so that was the agreement. Well, we had a certain date that we were supposed to finish the project, and we missed that date, the deadline, because of various complications and problems in the building project. We missed the deadline by about 30 days, a little less than 30 days. The savings and loan backed out on the deal at the last minute. Said, you didn't make your deadline, we will not loan. So that's going to put us in the hole, $400,000. So we went to Amarillo National Bank and told them what the situation was. And so they got together and they said, well, we believe in you, we believe in the project, and so we're gonna loan the whole amount of the money, and you can just forget the first federal savings loan. Well, we'd already given them an upfront fee, I forget what it was, probably several thousand dollars, And the man at Amarillo National said, "We would like for you to ask for that money back. I mean, you know, if we're going to loan that other money, we feel like we ought to get that fee." And said, since they're not going to do it, he said, "They probably won't give it back, but you can ask them." So I went to them and asked them, and they weren't going to give it back to us. They said they couldn't do that because that was part of the negotiation. So I got up one Sunday and told the folks, I said, you write the First Federal. If you have any money in there, tell them that, put a little pressure on them, if you will. One day I got a call from a guy down at First Federal. He said, we'd like to have a meeting with you. The president of the bank wants to meet you. Well, I'd never met the president of First Savings and Loan up to that time. He hadn't given me the time of day. And so I went down to First Federal. I'll tell you, I love this. I went down to First Federal, and boy, they ushered me in, treated me like a king, you know, and set me down in the office. And the president of the bank began to tell us what a lovely congregation we had, and began to tell me about what a future we had out in this location. And then he said, "We've really gotten a black eye over this not loaning the money." He said, "You guys didn't finish your part of the deal, and you didn't finish on the deadline, and we were just living up to our bargain." And said, "People have been writing us and taking their money out of the First Federal savings, and I know one guy in particular. They wrote to him and wanted to loan him some more money, and he'd borrowed quite a bit of money from him. He just turned it over and wrote back and said, because of the way you've treated our church, I'll never borrow any money from First Federal again." And so they had the check laying out there, and they gave it to me, and they said, "Now we want to be friends, and we don't want any more bad publicity." And I said, "Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll get up and tell them next Sunday morning." And so I got up and told them what happened. I want to tell you, they nearly rolled out in the aisles when I told them about what had happened. But I tell you, my experience with getting money and my experience with building has been no easy experience. Boy, we struggled, and you can't believe. It's painful for me to even look back and recall some of the struggles we had because we tried everything. Now, I've had people come to me and say, what did you do? We tried everything that you could possibly try to get money to build the building that we're in. We did a capital fund drive. We had a guy come along and sell us on the idea, if you'll do a capital fund drive with a congregation of your size, you can probably raise $300,000 and over a three-year period, and you can go to the savings and loan, and with that in hand, they will loan you the money. So we said, "Hey, that sounds like a good idea to us." So we raised $275,000 to be paid over a three-year period. I don't remember how much of it came in cash, but we went down to the savings and loan with that and said, "This is what we've done. We want to borrow some money." And they didn't even give us the time of day. They weren't interested. They weren't interested in the project whatsoever. So that threw a monkey wrench in the building project. And so then we sold bonds. We decided, well, the bond route's the way to go. And so we sold bonds. We hadn't been able to borrow money, so we decided, well, we'll sell bonds. We wanted to sell $800,000 worth of bonds. We sold bonds, and we ended up selling about $400,000 worth. We're still short. Well, about $350,000 is really what we sold. We were still short. And so finally we were able to negotiate this deal of selling this property, and then that gave us enough leverage with the bank and the savings and loan that we could borrow the money that we needed in order to finish the project. So the bank loaned us the money at 15%. Now that sounds like pretty high interest, but when you got to remember that the rate at this time was like 18% when we got this 15% money. And so it is a fixed loan. It's not a floating loan. And so it put us in a position with selling this and getting 12% off of this. There was only 3% differential. We felt like we were safe to go ahead and enter into the project. And we were able to complete the building with the bonds we had sold and with the loan we had made and with the funds we had raised. We were able to finish the project. Now, that's the financing angle. And of course, what I wanted to do was get it all in a nice, neat little package and go to the people and say, "Folks, this is exactly what we can do. And I can, guarantee that this is going to all work out." But you see, I couldn't do that. I had to go to them with bits and pieces. And I'm just grateful and thankful that I had a congregation that believed in the pastor and the board enough that they stood with us through thick and thin until we could get it all put together and get the building project finished. I'm sure that there are a lot of people that have much simpler ways of doing it, better ways, and know how to get leverage much better than we did. But I received a letter not too some time ago from a brother who had built in Colorado, and he listed the number of loaning institutions that he had gone to, lending institutions that he'd gone to try to get money. And I mean, it filled a whole typewritten sheet, double spaced. You know, money's hard to get for churches. If you've ever tried to have a project, you know that, because they consider us to be a poor risk. The truth is that churches are a good risk. Now, the bonding people tell me that during the Depression, the churches are the ones that paid out of their indebtedness. While others took bankruptcy, churches felt a moral obligation to pay their debts, and they paid out. And their record is good. But a savings and loan in a lending institution does not like to loan to churches, simply because if they default, they don't want to foreclose on a church. Because like the president at First Federal Savings and Loan said, they get a black eye if they don't go through, or they foreclose on a church. So that was the way we secured our money. Now, as far as the builder was concerned, I did not feel that I had the expertise nor the time to pastor the church and be responsible for the building project at the same time. My first desire was to hire a man who lived in Amarillo, Brother Tony Rogers, who he's built several churches in this area, and I wanted to hire him to oversee the project and pay him the money to oversee it, and then just let him hire whatever help he needed. Well, as it turned out, we went to an architect who drew up some plans. One of the men on the board knew this man, had this man had drawn some plans for him, so we went to him and they drew up some plans. And when they got the plans drawn up and we drew up and we took them to the man who was going to oversee the project, he looked at them and studied them a little bit, and he said, "Brother Slayton, if we build this building like it's drawn, it will cost you $3 million. Well, there was no way. There just absolutely was no way. We could not do that. I knew it. I didn't have to go to the board and ask the board. I knew we couldn't do that. And now you have to understand that in the church that I pastor, I don't have any affluent people. All the people, I have a couple of businessmen, but and I don't know how much they're worth, but regardless how much they're worth, they're just not the kind that kick in the big bucks like some places where some guy kicks in $50,000 or $100,000 at a time on a building project. I can't remember, but to my knowledge, there probably was not over at any time a gift larger than $10,000 on our building project. I mean, they're just hardworking people. They're just people that work for wages, and they're people that have done well, but they don't have big bucks. And so we didn't have, I hear these guys talking about, you know, these capital fundraising guys. Do we have any of them in here tonight? Man, I tell you, they'll come to you and they'll tell, I was over here with Don George and I raised so many million. I was out here at Sacramento and we raised so many million. And if you'll just let us come, we'll raise you big bucks. Just watch out. Nobody knows your people like you know your people. And I don't care what they tell you. They're only going to get so much money out of your congregation. And unless you got some people that'll really kick in some pretty big bucks, they're not going to raise the kind of bucks they do in Sacramento or Dallas or somewhere else. And you have to be careful of that. Now, I'm not against capital fund drive. I'd do another one if I felt like we needed it. And someday, we probably will do another one, maybe for debt retirement or something to pay off a debt. But I'm just saying that and another thing you have to be careful of is these fellows with the bond programs. Watch them. You know, they're not the ones, they come for a 2-week program, and if you don't sell the bonds, then you're left with the program. So you have to be careful. And of course, I've gone through this and learned it by experience now. I know how to talk to them now. I know exactly what to say to him. But then I didn't. So we managed to struggle through it, and we got our building. We have a lovely facility. So after he came to me and said, well, it'll cost you $3 million, we had to make a change. And so he and I began to shop around, and we found Hallmark Builders in Amarillo, and they have what they call a design-build concept. Well, we'd already put out money on plans. We didn't want to go have another full set of plans done. And so we went to them, and they built us. They used the plans that we had, revamped the plans, made it a part of the fee, and gave us a cut rate fee because we already had plans, and then gave us a bid on the project. And after they shaved that figure from with some adjustments on the building, they shaved that figure from $3 million down to $1.2 million. And actually, we signed the contract for them, I think, with for $1.5 million. $1.1 million. We ended up spending $1.2 million to get the building built because of things that happen in any project. You add about 10% to it, and that's a minimum you'll probably spend before it's over with. Because they come to you and you want to make changes. You know, you got this wall here and you decide it needs to be moved out here. Or you have something else that needs to be done and you have to revamp it. Well, they don't do that for nothing. You understand? They charge you to do that stuff. Every change, you know, adds to the building project. And so we ended up spending about $1.2 million by holding everything as much as we could and making what adjustments had to be made once we got into the project. But we went with a steel building, and we built a steel structure, used that kind of a format, and then used the construction stone on the outside to make a very attractive building. Now, if you drive into our parking lot, and most of you have been there one time or another, you would never know that our building was a steel structure. I mean, it's steel throughout, behind the walls, studding and everything. It's a commercially type built building, but it's very attractive, very comfortable, and very functional, and we're very, very pleased with it. And I'm convinced that for a church, it's a good way to go, unless you got lots of bucks, lots of money. If you're going to build a new church, it's a good way to consider, because it can be done much cheaper. I can't remember the exact amount of money that we saved, but to have gone the masonry route, it would have cost us at least 10 cents, 15 cents a square foot more than what we paid to build a building that we built and to get the facility that we have at the present time. Now, another problem we run into, of course, is that when you start into a building project, you hope that your old property is going to sell by the time you need money when you finish the project so you can apply it on your loan and apply it where it'll help you the most. Well, we're in our building. We've been in the building 2 years. We're in our third year in the building, and the old building over in Amarillo Boulevard has not sold yet. We're in negotiation, and we think we have it sold now. So it's taken us 3 years to sell the old property, all of it. We disposed of some of it early along, but now we are in the process, hopefully we'll get that sold. And also, we found out just the other day that this piece of property we sold and we're getting payments on, they're going to pay off by December 1. So the $800,000 note that we started out with, by December 1 of 84, we should have it down to $300,000. Then all we have to do is pay off the $400,000, $300,000 of bonds that we owe, pay them as they come due, and the church should be in an excellent financial condition within another year. But I'm telling you, it hasn't been easy. I spent some anxious moments early in the project. I can remember going out one day when we had the slab poured, and I just couldn't see at that point. Things weren't working out. The finances weren't what I felt like they ought to be at that point. And I can remember breaking down and weeping because I felt like I'd pulled a stupid thing, got that church in a building project they weren't going to be able to finish, and it was going to be a fiasco. But I'm glad to tell you that God saw us through it, and I didn't have any nervous breakdowns. I'm still with the church, still in good favor with the church. The Lord's still blessing us there, and if I leave, it won't be because of the building project. It'll be for some other reason. God helped us through it. You can build without having to leave the church after you build. I don't think you have to leave a church when you build, but I can say, I believe, without fear of successful contradiction, that you can never build without problems. You just might as well get ready, because it's going to be, you're going to have trouble, you're going to have difficulty, and I don't care how you plan it, it's never going to work out exactly like you put it down on paper. It looks easy, but it's not easy. Now, I've spent about 15 or 20 minutes talking about, and all I know to do is tell you my experience. And I don't know whether it'll be helpful to anybody or not, but if it can be helpful, I'm glad to share it. I cannot take any credit for what happened, because I had a good board who I advised and counseled with me and helped me and stood with me. I'll always be grateful to those first men that had the farsightedness and the vision to go out here and buy 20 acres instead of just 10 acres. That was a step of faith for those men. They didn't, you know, that was a big step for us. And yet, how could we know that when we got ready to build, we was going to have to put the church over here instead of over here? But God knew it, and the Lord directed. As I look back on the program, I can see His hand in everything that was done. And every time we got to one point in the building project where we ran out of money. We lacked $200,000 finishing the building. And I called the contractor, the builder, and I said, we're going to have to stop the project, finish it so far so we can go ahead and get in the building, and we'll finish the rest when we get in the building. They pulled off the project. We lost 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and that's why we went over our deadline with First Federal, meeting the deadline of construction, because when we finally got hold of the money, then to gear up again, it took them some time to get geared up, and then we missed our deadline of completing the project by 2 or 3 weeks. But I'm just grateful and thankful to God, because He helped us through the project, and every time there was a need arose, He helped us to meet the need, and a way was made. And I'm convinced that if God's in it, He will make a way somehow. Now, I don't think that excuses me for being foolish and unwise in what we do. We tried to we started out, our objective to begin with was to try to double our capacity. The capacity we had over on Amarillo Boulevard. It was not to be overly ambitious, but you have to watch architects. Architects don't think like preachers altogether. And so instead of an auditorium that would have doubled our capacity, well, it almost tripled it. That was not my idea and my design, but as we got into it, we felt like it was something we could live with, and I'm grateful it's what it is now, but we really just intended to double. We felt like we could, in all good conscience, with what ability we had, what financial ability we had, and the people we had, and the prospects for growth in Amarillo are not what they are in some places. If we were in an area where churches were just exploding, and that's not excusing me for not doing better than what I'm doing. We probably ought to be doing a lot better than what we're doing. But I just tried to be as honest with myself, knowing what my abilities were and what the abilities of the people were in reaching out, and the Lord helped us. Now, that's the way it worked for me. If I can answer any question, if anybody has any question, we want to take some time for some questions, I'd be happy to help any way I could. Brother Dave.
You relocated in the city limits.
Yes.
Well,
it wouldn't have made any difference, because where we relocated the property at that point was not any higher than it would have been outside. It really, and it wasn't a matter that we just wanted to get on the edge of the city limits. It was just a matter that was the best piece of ground we could find for the money, and that's what we bought. So we really didn't have that in consideration. I would not have mind going out a little bit if it was, but I think you have to be careful, because if you get too far out, then you don't have any community around. See, everything's building up around us now. And with another 2 to 5 years, we're going to be sitting right in the heart of a beautiful, developed area that's building up around us, and I really feel like that that's going to help us. I think you can get too far out, but now we have a church in Amarillo that went between Amarillo and Canyon and built a building. I don't know how they're doing. I would be a little scared of that, but they did it. I saw a hand back here, Brother Beaver.
Yeah.
That was in the worship part. The education facility we did just about doubled. It helped pretty good. Well, I didn't figure it on that basis. What I figured on was trying to double the Sunday school capacity and an auditorium to match it. Of course, in our day and time, I'm glad it didn't work out that way, because we're living in a time when the worship time is your larger, and you're you know, there was a time I can remember when people went to Sunday school and didn't go to church. Now it's just the reverse. And so we just figured double. We didn't figure to make one larger. We was going to make the facility the same. We were going to figure we were running approximately, let's say, 400. We hope to build so we can accommodate 800 to 1,000. And that was really the figure we had in mind. Type concept, and we had our rooms to match, really, but when we had to cut our project back in order to be able to build, well, it was the education area that really ended up suffering, and I didn't really design it that way. The architect presented it, we discussed it, and we as a board decided we'd go with his concept, and that's how it ended up. I don't know that I didn't make that decision. It just happened that way. Brother Nichol. Oh, yes. Yeah, sorry. Bill? Well, we were running 80% of capacity. Question is, at what percentage of capacity were we when we started to build? Now think about building. We were running approximately 80% capacity at the time that we were considering building. That was in our worship area. Now, the building we were in at the time had a larger auditorium than education facilities, and our education facilities were full. But our auditorium space was 80%, 80 to 85%, I'm just estimating, but 80 to 85% full at the time. But there were other problems involved. We did not just decide to leave the corner where we were. We spent a lot of time considering. And let me tell you, relocating is a tough job. It was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. And if I'd have known how hard it was going to be, I probably wouldn't have left the corner I did. I'd probably stayed right there. But I, being ignorant, you know, you do a lot of things that you just don't know, and you get into it. But we debated, and we were going to build on. But the problem, we were locked into a situation where it had become commercial around us. The street that we were on was deteriorating in that area of town at that time. We could not expand. There's no property available. There's no way we could go except up. And we didn't feel that was wise in this part of the country. We didn't feel like, in fact, the one builder I talked to said that for the amount of money you'd have to put into it to build your education facilities on up, and we could have done that. You can put that same amount of money in a new facility, and with a little add some to it, and you'd be better off. So I got a lot of counsel on it, and we discussed it and decided that because of the deterioration that was taking place, we had no choice really. If we were going to put that kind of money in a building, we didn't want it to be in a bad location. So we opted to move, and that's the reason we moved. Any other questions? Brother Gerald? Well, the capital fundraising drive is where you hire somebody to come in, and they what they do is evaluate your congregation. And the way they do that, you get a certain amount of your men together, and you take the membership of your congregation, however large it is, and they evaluate and estimate what that congregation could do in giving above and beyond their tithe. And they have a way of doing that, so they come pretty close to it. And then they'll what they do. They usually have a they help you enlist your congregation. You'll have a chairman of a oh I forget what they call it, but a guy that works with getting upfront money, get people to donate money up ahead of your banquet that they're going to have, and then you have a prayer committee, and you go out and have prayer for your church and in homes and so forth, and it's very well planned, very well developed program, and then on a certain time, a certain date that you set, they have a big banquet. The church underwrites the banquet, pays for it, invites the people there, and then at that banquet, the project or whatever you're going to do is presented in a very upfront manner and a very motivating way. And then immediately after the banquet, the people are advised that within the next week or so, there are going to be people from the church who are going to come and receive whatever they've prayed about, decided they're going to give to the project. And then they take about a week or 2 weeks, and then they go to each visit, each home that's involved, and that's the way they raise the funds. And it's what they do, they allow them 3 years to make the pledge. They can make a cash donation up front and then so much to pay the rest out, and they make a commitment that within 3 years they will donate above and beyond their tithe so much money to the church for whatever project it is. Now, after it's over with, they leave you with a follow-up group, and they are supposed to keep tabs of what's coming in, and also new people that are coming in, present the project to them so that you can get, because you're going to have some people leave and you're going to have some people come in. They're going to try to keep this project alive, and they claim that you can raise 80 to 90% of what you end up with as pledged. We didn't do that well because we didn't follow up. I'd say probably 70-75% is what we got. But see, we had a problem because we could not follow the capital fund drive. We could not follow the capital fund drive with going right into the project. You see, you build excitement. And then if we could have followed on and gone right into the project, it would have been great. But we couldn't do that. We had to back off because we couldn't get, nobody would loan us money. So that create a problem, because here you are, people are giving, and yet they're not seeing any progress. That kills motivation pretty fast. You know, I got almost embarrassed to go to district or general council meetings because they're saying, "Hey, when are you going to get this project underway?" Well, I don't know. You know, I hope one of these days. I'm working on it. I finally got to where I'd say, "I'm working on it." I'm still working on it. And then finally the day came. But I'd rather do it that way and still have a sound mind as to jump in somewhere where I didn't know where I was going and end up with a nervous breakdown or ulcerated stomach or whatever else goes along with worry and frustration, and I avoided that. And so I just did it the best. You know, somebody told me one time, I was going, when I was in school, trying to get a degree on one occasion, and I went talked to, I believe it was Dr. Blake Farmer. I was asking about how he got through school and how's the best way to go about completing a degree. And he just said something to me that really helped me. He said, "The best way to get an education is to get it the best way you can." And I about decided the best way to build is to build the best way you can. And Brother Farmer. Well, I really think. Well, no, it's a good question. I don't know that the problem is the way I built. I don't know whether I can recommend do's and don'ts or not. I'm not hedging on the question. It's a good question. And the do's and don'ts, if I were going to go into another building project, first of all, I would be careful about going into a capital fund drive if I was going to have one until I knew I could get the building project underway. That's one thing I would not let happen again. I lost some momentum. And then you can't go back then immediately and have one. I would be careful about going into a bond program unless I knew, until I knew pretty well where I stood with. Of course, there you're always got these gray areas where you don't know what your people can do. You put them to the test. For our congregation, an $800,000 bond program was just a little ambitious. It was just a little too ambitious. I think that the first thing that I would do, the things I would do I think the first thing is I'd pray an awful lot and be sure it was God before I ever got into another project. I mean, I just think you better be sure it's God. You just better be sure you're doing what God wants to do. And it's not just some personal desire to be able to say, I built a building. There's not that much glory in building a building. I also would be careful. I think I would. The next thing I would do then would be to try to decide the kind of building I wanted to build as much as possible, and try to know, get some preliminary things drawn up, and the kind of building, know a little more where I'd be careful about just trusting an architect to draw up a building for me, because architects are a funny breed. The guy that built our first plans was used to doing cost-plus projects. He didn't do church projects. You know, he's used to doing schools where they just overrun it and keep going, you know. And the state just keeps pumping tax money, and well, we don't have access to tax money. And I think I would watch that. I took a recommendation of a board member. I mean, he was a good board member, and he didn't have any idea that guy was going to do that, you know, end up with that kind of a drawing. And those are things that I would watch and try to be careful before I made any commitments along that line. I do think that of course, I think you need to be very, I think you need to have the favor of your board with you. I think it's just absolutely essential that you have a board that's going to work with you in a deal like this, or a building committee, whichever the situation is, because you're just going to run into things down the line that you're going to have to, if they're not with you, brother, you're going to have problems. And have their favor and know where I was going. And of course, I think the one thing that was favorable to me, I didn't just, when I went to pastor the church, I didn't just jump out after the first year and start pushing the building program. And by the time I got to the building program, I was well established enough as pastor that they had confidence that I was not going to just get them into something and run off and leave them. And so I think one of the dangers, and I don't think anybody ought to ever build unless they're willing to stay and see the thing through. I said, I don't think that anybody ought to ever build unless they're willing to stay and see the thing through. Now, it's easy to get people in debt, and then you can relocate and run off and leave them with a big debt. I just think that that's next to the unpardonable sin as far as I'm concerned. I just think that'd be awful. And that weighed very heavily upon me, especially during the troubled times when it looked like that's exactly what I'd done. So I think we need to be very careful about that. Yes?
You said you knew how to talk.
How do you talk to the savings and loans when you want to borrow money? Well, what I had in mind there was that when I first went to borrow money, see, they made all the stipulations. Now, they wanted us to have so many people sign so much, you know, and they wanted you to, you know, well, they just want to put you in almost an untenable situation with restrictions and so on and so forth. And for example, just to give you another little example, they put a 3% penalty on us if we paid off the loan within 3 years. Well, we are going to pay off a good hunk of that loan, but you see, we're not with the savings and loan now, and the bank says we won't hold you to that. You see, there are just some things, once you deal with these guys, you find out that there's some things they can do. They tell you they can't do, but they can do what they want to do just about within certain limits. And I just know that another thing I think that a church needs to do is they need to establish credibility with a bank in town that's got ability to help them. Now, it's one thing to go out and put your money in a little bank that can't help you, but when you need money, you need to be with a bank that can help you. And of course, Amarillo National and Amarillo just has a reputation for being good to local projects and churches in particular, and we hadn't established credibility with them, but they went with us anyway. I think another thing I would do if I was going into any project of any size, I personally would try to get, as complex as the money market is and the situation is, I would try to hire a consultant in the field of church financing to help me. I think it's money. Well, I think it'd be money well spent. In fact, the thing that saved us in our project was I called a fellow in Springfield by the name of Jim Olson. Our backs were to the wall. We tried every way to get financing. We tried the banks. We tried the savings and loan. We'd sold what bonds we could. We couldn't get the building. We didn't have enough to get the building project underway. And I called Jim Olson in Springfield. He came down, reviewed our project, and he put together a package and went to Amarillo National Bank, and he sold that bank. He went to two banks in Amarillo. He went to First National, went to Amarillo National, and First National wouldn't take the project, but Amarillo National did. But one of the people in the commercial department at First National Bank said to me, "That man knows how to talk to bankers." And he was able to convince Amarillo National Bank that our project was a good one and that the package would fly. And they bought the program that he lined, and that's the way we got our money. I can't take credit for getting the money, really. But but having worked with him, I learned a few things in talking to them that I could go and approach them on. But you still never get around the idea you got to have so much collateral before they're going to talk to you. Some kind of collateral or some kind of leverage. And there are different ways of doing that. Now, Jim Olson has mentioned to me not too long ago that he has put together a unique financing package now that he is promoting to churches, which is very helpful in helping to be able to sell banks on the idea of lending money to churches now. And I don't know the details of it, but I certainly would check into it. I would check things before I just let a bonding company or a capital fund drive or anybody else come and sell me on their particular program. I'd really check them out and put my feelers out and see. And it might surprise you at what is out there that you're not even aware of. Just don't get in a hurry, would be my advice. And if it's of a major project of any consequence. Yes, but I really have a hard time with that because I've never had two services. We got to the point where we were about to talk about two services, but we never went to two services. We talked about it. Personally, I don't like the idea of two services. I mean, that's just me. Call me lazy or whatever you want. I just don't like the idea of two services. I get tired enough preaching what I do on Sunday besides adding another service, and if I was forced to it, I would do it, but I'd have to really be forced to it. I mean, they'd have to be pushing the walls out and people have to be standing outside knocking to get in on Sunday morning before I do two services. I'm not about to do two services just to say, oh, we had a house full and then we had a hand, you know, just to add a handful more on an early service just to be able to say our building won't hold them. I'm not interested in that. It'd have to be pretty. And if a church is small and wanting to relocate, I think the big question that the person has to answer then is how long is a person willing to stay there to see it through? Because when you talk about relocating, you're talking about some time. It takes time. And I I'd sure be committed to the area before I went into that. That'd be my opinion. Brother, well, you're not ever going to convince everybody. And you're going to have some people that are going to leave you over the building project. You just might as well make up your mind. Somebody's going to get mad and leave because they don't like the way you handle the project. But that's where you have to make up your mind that it's God. And that God's in it. And that it is. And that no matter whether you know what they do or what happens or who comes or who goes, you're going to stay and see that project through. And it is God's plan for that church. And once you do that, then, now I have experienced that when people left over the building program or parts of it or whatever, the Lord always provided somebody else and sent somebody else along who said, hey man, I'm excited about this. It balances out, in my opinion. It did in our project. Well, I lost some people over the building project, no question about it. And when we moved, we lost some people. Brother Burkhalter, is he here tonight? Man, he got some of our good people. One guy went to see a man that was one of the faithful members in our church and said, I can't believe you left First Assembly. He said, I didn't leave First Assembly. They left me.
Watch your church. I know your church didn't shut down, but watch sit there in a church meeting and say, I want red carpet and I want green and I want blue.
No.
How do you handle that?
Okay, the way we handle it.
What do you allow the corporate bodies inside?
Very little. Very, very little. Very little. And the reason I did is because it's impossible to please everybody. And our congregation had enough confidence in the board as a building committee that they let us make those decisions. And I'm grateful to God because I had one session where we got to the end of the project and we called the deacons' wives in with the deacons to make some color selections. And I was thankful to God when that meeting was over. I just wanted a woman's point of view. But I'm telling you, it's hard. Brother, when you get women together trying to decide on the color carpet, you got problems. I had one lady who came to the church when we had the building. The pews were all scattered, all they weren't even put together yet. And she saw that brown carpet and she saw that burnt orange color on those backs of those pews, and she saw the color of the pews, and even the inside wasn't completely finished. And she said, Brother Slayton, I don't think I'm going to like this. I didn't say much. I just went on, you know. I was too late then. But when they got it all put together, and she came back, she came around to me on our dedication day. She said, Brother Slayton, would you please forget what I said the other day? This is absolutely beautiful. And if I'd have listened to everybody who had an opinion, it would have drove me crazy, but we just made decisions as we went along. And I let the builder make a lot. We had an architect, and the builders were really, they did have a good feel for churches and color schemes. And they presented to us their suggestions. We made the board and pastor together made the final decisions. And we put it all together in the churches. I have had very little complaint over it.
You think that has to be, especially the smaller churches, that has to be settled all up front before anything is beginning.
Oh, yes.
You've got to settle that.
Well, we settled it. I mean, they put it in the hands of the board in a business meeting to take care of all of that. And it was, so we, you know, then when people, and I'll tell you something else. The board made me responsible to deal with the builder. So they didn't have to go deal with four or five different people. Brother, that'll drive a builder crazy. And if there were problems, I went to the board and we discussed it and made a decision. Then I went to the builder. And we didn't have too many problems along that line, for which I'm thankful. My time is about up here. I don't care how long we go. Brother, yeah, our time's up. Brother Jones, we'll let his be the last question. Very little, very little, very little. I mean, there's some. There's some. But when I was ready, the size project I had, I got up on the general presbytery floor one day and made an appeal. I said, you know, I don't understand it. You know, there's no financing through our fellowship that's available for a project our size. We got to go outside somewhere. I think they ought to have, but we don't have. I think that's sad. That's one thing I think we make a mistake where we don't provide. Oh, they will for Pioneer Churches and a little project, you know. But I'd check the interest rate because they don't give their money away either. Well, I'd check it. I'd check it very carefully. Unless you go with this type of bond program they have. The problem we had with their bond program was that nobody wanted to. It was long-term investment, and the interest they were going to get on people don't want to lend their money out for long terms, folks. They want short-term return, and they want good interest on their money, and that's what we ran into on the bond problem. Welcome. I'll be glad to talk to anybody further about building if I can help you in any way. I'd be glad to.
All right, thank you, Brother Slayton. We appreciate this informative session this evening. This is something that happens even in the smaller, very smallest churches. Brother Carl Savage has just built a beautiful structure over at Paducah. Beautiful facility there. Brother Burkhalter has just finished one in Amarillo. And there are building projects in progress at this point across the district. we just felt like that this is something that you'd be interested in, and if we can glean some information here that will be helpful to us, we felt like it would be beneficial. We appreciate Brother Slayton giving us all these feelings here that he has, and if you'd like to talk to him sometime later, or any of these fellows that have finished the building program, I'm sure they'd be happy to give you any information that they might have. One thing I appreciate about Brother Slayton, he'll tell you what he really thinks. Praise God. All right, let's take about a 10-minute break here, and we'll be ready for our evening session. There is coffee out in the hall. I see a familiar face back in the door, and if I read lips correctly, he's saying, bookstore, bookstore. Brother Jerry Venable has a selection of books. He's got just the book you need. Probably some you don't need, but see you.